Lecture 35, Modernizing India.
If the dominant national political figure for India's first 18 years was Jawaharlal Nehru, then the next dominant figures were his only child, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, and her two sons, Sanjay and Rajiv, followed by Rajiv's widow, Sonia. So while the history of independent India is by no means confined to just the premier leader, we cannot understand that history without considering this central Nehru-Gandhi dynasty. In the last lecture, we looked at the foundation of the new nation during the Nehru years. In this lecture, we'll consider the following decades, especially in light of the careers of Indira, Sanjay, Rajiv, and Sonia Gandhi, but in the context of the many changes in India's condition overall. At Nehru's death in 1964, the Indian National Congress Party still prevailed at the center and in most states. Yet, as you'll recall, collectively the party bosses were known as the Congress Syndicate. But none of these power brokers proved able to rise above his rivals in the syndicate to take Nehru's place as Prime Minister. Instead, the syndicate wanted a respected but less powerful figure to be the next Prime Minister. Reportedly, they offered the position to Mrs. Indira Gandhi, daughter of Nehru. She was the widow of a man named Gandhi, but no relation to Mohandas Mahatma Gandhi. Having no real experience in government, she declined. Next, they selected Lal Bahadur Shastri. A socialist, Shastri had a long and respected career in the nationalist movement and as a supportive member of Nehru's cabinet. But he had little political base of his own. Just at the time of the post-Nehruvian political transition in India's central government, the second war with Pakistan erupted in 1965. There had been India-Pakistan border disputes ever since independence, particularly in the uninhabitable Ran of Kutch and in strategic Kashmir. Many in India believe that Pakistan's General Ayub Khan, who had come to power in a military coup, was taking advantage of India's political weakness by invading. As you'll recall from a previous lecture, a month of fighting left a few thousand soldiers dead, but did not result in territorial gains for either belligerent. However, just after the signing of the peace treaty under Russia's mediation in Tashkent, Prime Minister Shastri died of a sudden heart attack. The Congress Syndicate was then faced with a situation similar to that of two decades earlier. This time, the party bosses again selected Mrs. Indira Gandhi as Prime Minister. She carried the national respect that she had inherited from her late father, Nehru. She had served as her widowed father's first lady after having separated from her husband, taking her two sons with her. She had also headed the youth wing of the Congress and had served as the president of the party. But at age 48, she had only very limited experience in government. Shastri had appointed her Minister for Information and Broadcasting during his short administration. At this time, the Congress was losing political dominance. The failure of the monsoon in 1965 and continued drought into the next year led to a sudden decline of almost 20% in food production. In the 1967 elections, the Congress retained only a slight majority in Parliament. Instead, rival political parties were rising in various states as voters found the rate of development and the rise of entrenched Congress political interests disillusioning. Two of India's major states, Kerala in the southwest and West Bengal in the east, elected communist governments in 1967 and 77, respectively. These were the first freely and democratically elected communist governments anywhere in the world. These state governments began far more fundamental programs of land redistribution and social change than anything the Congress had accomplished in the previous two decades. In other states, regionally based parties also arose. These included the Tamil Nationalist Party, the DMK, which started as a cultural movement around the Tamil language spoken in the region. The DMK was heatedly anti-Brahmin, since that small, high-caste elite had held much power under the British Raj and continued to try to control politics following independence. the DMK also stood strongly against the cultural domination of Hindi and the political domination of at the national level of North Indians. Some of the DMK's more fiery leaders called for secession from India and a restoration of the historic independence of the Tamil region. But the central Indian government refused to allow secessionist demands. Eventually, a broad consensus was reached that the central government would tolerate distinct state subnationalist identity movements, but not secession from the Indian Union. In the past 7 decades, nearly 20 new states have been created on the basis of ethnic and local cultural identities, but always within the Republic of India. Once in office as Prime Minister, Indira Gandhi increasingly devised her own policies. She had pushed hard for new kinds of agriculture with hybrid crops and intensive irrigation and fertilization. This green revolution, along with good monsoons, raised food production significantly in key regions, especially the Punjab. But many of the rural landless and urban poor received little benefit from such state-sponsored development and demanded more progressive policies. In her rhetoric, at least, Mrs. Gandhi promised to deliver liberation from poverty. Many of her policies were opposed by the more conservative power brokers within the Congress Party. So politically, Mrs. Gandhi increasingly resisted control by the Congress syndicate power brokers. Instead, she aligned more with the left-wing and regional parties outside the Congress. This led in 1969 to a decisive split in the party, with the supporters of the syndicate becoming the Congress O for organization, while supporters of Mrs. Gandhi became the Congress R for requisition, but also for reform or ruling. Winning a tense parliamentary vote, Indira Gandhi remained prime minister, but only with the support of non-Congress parties in parliament. Lacking the old party's well-entrenched regional and local organization, Mrs. Gandhi asserted her personal control over this new Congress R party. She also built up her popular support base by making differential appeals to the scheduled and other so-called backward castes, to Muslims, and to India's lower economic classes generally. Following this split in the Congress, Mrs. Gandhi began to implement policies that challenged the old entrenched economic and political elite represented by the syndicate. For example, in the 1971 national parliamentary elections, she made her campaign slogan, Garibi Hatao, abolish poverty. Strikingly, her party won an overwhelming majority in parliament. This enabled her to change the Indian constitution to limit personal property rights. She then abolished the right to privy purses, which had been given to India's former princes as the price for their accession to India. She nationalized many of India's largest banks, insurance companies, and coal mines, promising to use these resources for development and for the benefit of India's people. She also moved India more into alliance with the Soviet Union, away from the US. When East and West Pakistan fought their civil war in December 1971, she ordered the Indian Army to intervene. This decisively defeated and divided Pakistan by rapidly liberating Bangladesh. All this added to Prime Minister Indira Gandhi's aura as an unstoppable power. Further asserting her and India's might, in 1974 she ordered the underground testing of what she called a peaceful nuclear device. This openly marked India's unofficial membership in the small group of nations with atomic bombs. But Indira Gandhi's promises of rapid improvement in the lives of impoverished Indians and the development of the nation did not fully satisfy many. Starting in a Bengali village called Naxalbari, leftist leaders inspired by Mao Zedong began a people's revolution. Called Naxalites after their first appearance, this movement used revolutionary guerrilla action. This movement arose in the 1970s, but is still ongoing in as many as a third of India's rural districts. Gandhi's more authoritarian control over politics alienated many political leaders who had been working for their nation since before independence. Among the most prominent of these was Jai Prakash Narayan, a well-respected socialist leader. During the 1971 election, in Mrs. Indira Gandhi's home constituency of Raebareli, there had been some relatively minor campaigning irregularities. Her campaign manager and some of her election expenses had been paid by the government, for example, which was technically illegal for a political campaign, even for a sitting prime minister. Although Mrs. Gandhi won a massive majority in her constituency, her opponent brought a legal case against her. A series of judicial decisions in ever higher level courts went against her over the next 4 years. Finally, in June 1975, the Supreme Court ruled against her, calling her election illegal and ordering her to cease voting in Parliament. This was a real test of Indian democracy and the rule of law, and the balance of power held by India's hitherto independent judiciary. Emboldened, Jayaprakash Narayan declared total revolution, even calling on the army and police not to obey Mrs. Gandhi's illegitimate government. Many labor unions went on strike, deeply affecting the Indian economy. Instead of resigning, Mrs. Gandhi declared an authoritarian internal state of emergency. This was constitutionally authorized when the government had to suspend civil liberties for the sake of the nation. But many of her opponents and critics claimed that she had declared the emergency to save her own career and was thereby violating the authority of the judiciary and India's long-established democratic principles. During this state of emergency, which lasted for nearly 2 years, Mrs. Gandhi directed Parliament to amend the Indian Constitution, placing the Prime Minister above the authority of the courts. Habeas corpus was suspended, so police officers could make arrests and confine people without trial. Up to 100,000 people were imprisoned without trial, including many of Mrs. Gandhi's political opponents. Newspapers were censored, and any criticism of government removed. The parliamentary elections due for 1976 were postponed indefinitely. Both domestically and internationally, Mrs. Gandhi asserted that national discipline was vital before India could truly develop. For example, many of India's economic gains had been dissipated among the rising population, which had increased 50% since independence, reaching nearly 700 million. But voluntary population control measures had not been very effective. So during the emergency, Mrs. Gandhi determined to bring population growth under control. She decided that vasectomies were the most effective means of contraception, being relatively simple as an operation. So any man with two or more children was motivated by the government to undergo this operation. This included all male government workers except members of the armed forces. Also, government workers, male and female, had to motivate two men to get vasectomies each month or else suffer major disruptions in their careers. On a personal note, during the emergency, I needed an Indian driver's license. The officials in the license bureau did not require an actual road test from would-be drivers, only a vasectomy. In my case, they were disappointed since I had no children and would not volunteer for the operation. Indira Gandhi also used her unchecked authority to implement provisions that had hitherto been blocked by entrenched economic and political interests. For example, the same constitutional amendment that had exempted her from judicial authority also created new environmental safeguards. Conservation of animals and forests, which had been a state-level responsibility and often disregarded by hunters and contractors, became a central government responsibility as well. It became the constitutional obligation of the government to protect ecology and for each citizen to, quote, protect and improve the natural environment, including forest, lakes, rivers, and wildlife, and have compassion for living creatures, end quote. Thus, Mrs. Gandhi's personal vision for India prevailed in many aspects of policies and the environment and the economy. Parliament and even her cabinet were subdued. During the emergency, she increasingly relied on her second son, Sanjay Gandhi, although he had no elected office. He acted in her name without restraint. For example, Old Delhi had long been home to many Muslim families and various small-scale industries. Led by Sanjay, the police suddenly cleared away many of the densest slums, relocating about 500,000 of its inhabitants in distant locations. He supervised massive vasectomy camps in which officials and the police rounded up poor men and prisoners for the operation under unsterile conditions. Although widespread resentment against these harsh emergency measures grew, few could oppose them openly. Hence, Mrs. Gandhi believed she had popular support. To prove that support within India and to her international critics, in 1977, she released her political opponents and ordered the postponed parliamentary elections to be held immediately after. United for the first time by their opposition to Mrs. Gandhi, an array of political figures joined under the umbrella of the Janata, or People's Party. Even members of Mrs. Gandhi's own cabinet, who had remained silent during the emergency, split away to join the Janata. This left the remnants of her party renamed as the Congress I for Indira. Therefore, the loose Janata coalition contained left and right-wing parties, including the main Hindu Nationalist Party, the Jansangh, which had not previously garnered much electoral support. Much to most people's surprise, the Janata Party soundly defeated the Congress I. Almost all of North India, Muslims and the poor, many of whom had suffered the brunt of the emergency measures, voted against her. But the Janata Party, having accomplished its almost only uniting goal, began to break down into its rival component parties and factions. They temporarily accepted as prime minister an octogenarian regional leader, Morarji Desai. He was a leading member of the Congress syndicate and quite conservative politically. This alienated the more progressive factions and parties within the Janata coalition, which then repudiated him within 2 years, forcing his resignation. Charan Singh, a rival leader in the fragmenting Janata coalition, briefly claimed the premiership, but he failed to win even a single vote in parliament and had to dissolve it. In the 1980 national parliamentary election, Indira Gandhi successfully contrasted her strong administration against the ineffective Janata. Her Congress I won 2/3 majority. Restored as a strong prime minister, she remained shaken by her brief period out of power and her arrest and trial. Her son Sanjay had been briefly imprisoned, so she determined to trust no one but Sanjay to share her power. She made him deputy prime minister and her heir apparent. But only 6 months after the election, Sanjay cracked up his high-performance acrobatic plane, killing himself and a passenger. Suddenly bereft of her son and chosen heir, Mrs. Gandhi turned to her elder son, Rajiv Gandhi. He had deliberately remained outside of politics, diligently pursuing his chosen career as an airline pilot in the state-owned airline. He had married an Italian woman, Sonia, and whom he had met in Britain. She shunned politics and even had not wanted Indian citizenship. Finally, Rajiv reluctantly submitted to his mother's desperate desire and entered politics as her new heir apparent. In her restored regime, Mrs. Gandhi determined not to be challenged politically again. She exercised highly centralized control over the Congress I, allowing only total loyalists to rise. This meant that her party had only a very weak organization, relying instead on her personal popularity. She also schemed to weaken rival parties. For instance, she tolerated an increasingly armed Sikh separatist movement in the Punjab that demanded its own independent separate nation of Khalistan. These militants drained support away from the more establishment Sikh political party that opposed Mrs. Gandhi, enabling her own supporters to hold the Punjab state government. However, by 1984, the Khalistan movement became so violent that she finally ordered the Indian army to assault its fortified arms factory in the holiest Sikh site, the Golden Temple in Amritsar. The army's Operation Blue Star destroyed much of the Golden Temple and killed hundreds of innocent Sikh pilgrims trapped inside. Many Sikhs in the army felt betrayed. Indeed, Indira Gandhi's own Sikh bodyguards assassinated her 4 months later. As Rajiv Gandhi rose above his grief and took over the government, many of Mrs. Gandhi's fervent followers in the national capital took revenge by killing about 1,000 innocent Sikhs and burning out many more. In subsequent years, the army and armed police forcefully crushed the Khalistan movement. In 1990 alone, some 4,000 people died in the Punjab fighting. Many armed confrontations with the police led to these deaths. But by 1992, this often extrajudicial force and the economic development of the Punjab largely ended the Khalistan movement. During the period of national mourning for his mother, Rajiv called a national election and led the Congress I to a strong victory. Again, the Congress won only 48% of the votes, but 80% of parliament seats. But the efforts by Rajiv Gandhi to modernize India rapidly and even to retain control of the Congress both faltered. He tried to replace the established Congress I leaders with technocrats, including experts in information technology. But this lost the party a series of state elections. He began opening the Indian economy to world trade, but that threatened India's inefficient industries and the comfortable middle classes. He tried to appeal to conservative Muslim voters, but this created space for the rise of a Hindu nationalist party, the Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP, which had developed out of the old Jan Sangh Party. In 1987, Rajiv ordered an 80,000-man Indian peacekeeping force to end the bloody civil war in Sri Lanka between the Tamil Tigers and the Sinhala government. This was a debacle that alienated Tamils in India, Sri Lanka, and internationally, and made the world question India's role as regional policeman. Rajiv claimed to be above corruption, but mysterious payments of millions of dollars into a Swiss bank account suggested his involvement. Hence, his popularity plummeted, and the Congress I lost the 1989 national election. But only another weak coalition party called the Janata Dal managed to scrape together a minority government. It elected Vishwanath Pratap Singh as prime minister on the basis of his leading role as a critic of Rajiv's alleged corruption. This government survived only briefly with the uncertain support of both left political parties and the BJP. As VP Singh's government floundered, he ordered the implementation of the Mundal Commission report. This had been commissioned by the previous weak Janata coalition government a decade earlier. The report would extend the existing quota reservation system to benefit the more than half the population officially classed as other backwards castes or communities, OBCs. The implementation ordered by VP Singh thus attracted large numbers of supporters who would now get access to education and to government employment, but it also alienated the established upper castes as well as progressive and conservatives who believe that merit, not birth, should be rewarded. But this measure failed to save the Janata Dal, and after a brief months-long transitional premiership of Chandrasekhar, a new election commenced in 1991. Rajiv Gandhi appeared to be headed for victory, only to be assassinated while campaigning, evidently by a Tamil suicide bomber in revenge for Rajiv's blundering incursion into Sri Lanka. While a Congress I managed to form a loose governing coalition, the aging compromise Prime Minister, Narasimha Rao, was relatively weak. India's economy was also weak. It remained largely based on Nehru's program of large state-owned industries and private companies that were highly regulated by licenses and quotas. High tariff barriers and limits on external investment insulated much Indian industry from global competition. Yet India was not insulated from import prices, particularly of petroleum and natural gas. Foreign currency reserves became dangerously low. International Monetary Fund demands in exchange for financial support gave influence to economists and politicians who had been urging major reforms. The government began to open up the economy to world trade, a process that has hesitatingly continued until today. This has enabled entrepreneurial middle and upper class businessmen and investors to profit greatly from India's hitherto pent up but now largely opened markets. Some Indian corporations have successfully competed internationally, although many of the Indian middle and working classes have been threatened by these changes. Further, a growing challenge to Nehru's legacy of a secular government, the Hindu nationalist BJP continued its rise. Many people in the majority Hindu community were also among those threatened by the Congress's economic reforms. The BJP also appealed to those who felt the Muslim minority had been especially protected by Congress. The BJP made the Babri Masjid in Ayodhya a symbol of Muslim oppression. This was a mosque constructed in 1527, allegedly on the site of a demolished temple marking the sacred birthplace, or Janmabhoomi, of the god Ram. In 1990, and then in 1992, BJP-led assaults on that mosque finally demolished it. In retaliation, Muslim militants set off bombs in Mumbai, which led to anti-Muslim riots. In the political instability of the period, a series of very short-lived coalition governments struggled to hold power. The BJP Prime Minister, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, for example, in 1996 held office for only 13 days before losing a vote and having to resign. Two very insecure United Front coalition governments struggled to stay in office over the next 2 years. Meanwhile, desperate to find a unifying focus, the Congress turned to Rajiv Gandhi's widow, Sonia. But a coalition headed by the BJP won the 1998 election. Prime Minister Vajpayee returned to office for the second time, although his government lasted only 13 months. Vajpayee represented a new model for India. From his early 20s, he had served as a full-time worker in the RSS. This was a national service organization with many associated organizations dedicated to make India a stronger Hindu nation. Its doctrine was Hindutva, meaning Hinduness, as the core of Indian civilization and nationhood. Vajpayee, like many in the RSS, never married, since that would distract him from his commitment to the cause and nation. The RSS directed him into journalism and politics, especially into the formation and leadership of the BJP. Demonstrating the BJP's model of an assertive India, only a month in office, this government ordered an underground explosion of 5 nuclear weapons. In the face of international sanctions, Pakistan, in retaliation, set off 6 underground weapons. In this arms race, the much smaller Pakistan could not endure either the military costs or the international sanctions as much as India could. Nor could Pakistan's 1999 armed incursion at Kargil in Kashmir succeed. Riding on national feeling, Vajpayee's coalition was strengthened in the 1999 elections. This time, his government survived for the full 5-year term. This government advanced liberalization of the Indian economy and the privatization of some state-owned corporations. But in the 2004 elections, rallying around Mrs. Sonia Gandhi, the Congress led a coalition of 15 political parties that overmatched the BJP's coalition. As the face of this coalition, a respected economist but weak political leader, Manmohan Singh, presided as prime minister for 2 terms. Neither of Sonia Gandhi's children, that is Nehru's great-grandchildren, have emerged as major political figures. Priyanka, born in 1972, married a Christian Indian businessman and is largely withdrawn from politics. Rahul, born in 1970, has several times entered the political arena but has not proven himself effective there. He has also expressed strong disagreement with the idea of an inherited dynastic politics. This has clearly undercut his own basis for leadership. So the Congress is currently at one of its very lowest points in terms of parliamentary representation and popular support. In contrast, a resurging BJP under its new dynamic leader, Narendra Modi, returned with a resounding victory in 2014. We'll devote much of the next and final lecture to these 21st century developments, not only in India, but in the other nations of South Asia as well.